over.
Well, we don't want the American people. And it's the same old story. Over and over again, governments lie to cover themselves, and people like Commander Safford, who tell the truth, the whistleblowers, are ultimately destroyed. And a fine patriotic military, or pardon me, a naval officer had his career cut short. Did he eventually have to resign from the Navy for telling the truth?
They just ruined him in the eyes of the world. And then, of course, afterwards, several years afterwards, when Eisenhower became president, he knew the truth, and he awarded him $50,000 because he had invented a device that stopped the Germans from listening into our communications and saved thousands and thousands of American lives. We were having many ships destroyed because we were using an old code, and he found it out, and then he developed a code that could not be broken and is still being used. And because of that, this man, whose reputation was ruined years before by the government, was given a prize of $50,000.
Well, it's an amazing story.
I thank President Eisenhower for having the guts to do it.
Now, in your book, you mentioned a number of instances where various shipping concerns, various ships, foreign ships, were actually tracking that Japanese naval convoy all across the Pacific. So there was not just the one report that you mentioned from the Dutch admiral, but there were a number of reports before that were available to the American Navy in Washington,
yes.
D.C. So they knew where the Japanese carrier fleet. It wasn't that it had disappeared. It was just that they didn't want the commanders at Pearl Harbor to know where it was.
And I tell the story of the man who was given the job of tracking the so-called carriers, and he was an enlisted man, a brilliant man, who was given the job because of his ability to track, and using his technique, he found the same things that Captain Ranoff had talked about, that on December 2nd, he tracked them, and then he tracked them day by day as they were going along, and on the night of December 6th, they also tracked from all their information in San Francisco, they tracked them about 300 miles from Pearl Harbor. And that night they had a little celebration in their office because they knew that we could knock the devil out of them then. But they were also warned never to reveal this. But I finally got this man to tell his story. And when he did, he got married afterwards and asked me not to use his name. But I said, can I use your picture? And he said, yes. In other words, he allowed me to use his picture, and he was later found. And then he was attacked by people calling him a liar.
Well, it's a continual cover-up. In fact, there are many historians, Charles Beard, Harry Elmer Barnes, other historians, who immediately after the Second World War tried to tell the story. They were blocked at every turn. And I don't know whether you ever read Harry Elmer Barnes' book, Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. But he told how effectively the forces on the other side were organized really to censor the information, and how historians at that time just couldn't get into the files. I understand that by the time you did your research, you were given access to the files, but certainly immediately after the Second World War, unless you were a left-wing historian who was going to cover the truth, you couldn't get into the naval documents.
It was Eisenhower. When he became president, he opened up all that. I found the Navy completely open and honest and helpful in getting all this information. They helped me get it, and I checked all the information back with them, and nobody ever tried to shut me up.
Right. Well, of course, you were very fortunate that had occurred, because reading Harry Elmer Barnes' book, you can see the frustrations the historians felt in the late 40s and the early 50s, as they were effectively blocked from getting the information.
Charles Beard was considered the finest historian in the United States, and he was ruined by these people that called him a foolish or a liar. And all they had was words and position, and they knocked him out of the box.
Yes, but they also held the reins of power in the media. They held the reins of power in government and in the foundations and other organizations. And they were able to use that influence to be able to control how history was taught in our colleges and in our schools. And many of the books that were written, so many of the books that were written, just were written to cover up the real true story of the betrayal of those men and commanders at Pearl Harbor. Well, I thank you so much for coming on with us here. Well, let's just open up our lines once more to see if anybody would like to call us at 464-8295 and have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to talk to John Toland, a world-famous author, and certainly the man who's written the definitive book on the story of Pearl Harbor. We're going to have just a break here for a minute, and then we'll be back with Mr. Toland. Producer was coming in here and telling me we finally got things straightened out so that at least the audience could hear you this evening. It's been a terrible stormy night here. We've had thunder and lightning. In fact, just before we went on the air, why one of my neighbors called and wondered if our house had been incinerated by a lightning bolt.
Is that coming out loud now?
Well, it's let up a little bit now. How's the weather back there in Connecticut?
It's very mild out here. We've had rain, but that's all.
Okay, fine. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on with us this evening and giving us that background on infamy. And I really appreciate the hard work that you did on the book, and we'll look forward to your new book on the personal life of Adolf Hitler. What will be the name of it?
Right now the name is The Private Life of Adolf Hitler.
And when will it be, who's going to be publishing it?
Well, they're dickering about that now. It'll probably be out in 1994.
All right, fine. Well, we're certainly going to look forward to it. And thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being patient.
thank you. Good night.
Good night.
I wanted to read to you something that Charles Beard had written. And, of course, Charles Beard was, as Mr. Toland said, one of the world's leading historians. And he was actively destroyed because he wanted to tell the truth about what had actually happened at Pearl Harbor. And here's what Charles Beard actually said, and you can get it in Perpetual War and Perpetual Peace. You may have trouble getting the book because many of these books are censored and they're not available at your local library. But for those of you who are interested in getting the truth and find out what's going on, we have access to the censored books, or the books that you can't get through regular channels. But here's what Charles Beard said. The Rockefeller Foundation and the Council on Foreign Relations intended to prevent, if they can, a repetition of what they called in the vernacular the debunking journalistic campaign following World War I. Translated into precise English, this means that the foundations and the council do not want journalists or any other person to examine too closely and criticize too freely the official propaganda and official statements relative to our basic aims and activities during World War II. In short, they hope that, among other things, the policies and measures of Franklin Delano Roosevelt will escape in the coming years the critical analysis, evaluation, and exposition that befell the policies and measures of Woodrow Wilson and the Entente allies after World War I.
And, of course, we were manipulated into World War One. We were manipulated into World War II. And, of course, most of you are going to say, well, but we had to do something about terrible Adolf Hitler. And, yes, Adolf Hitler was terrible, but who financed him? Do you really believe that Adolf Hitler started out in the beer halls of Munich in 1933 and within 6 years was threatening the peace of the world? Or was there a tremendous force behind him? I will tell you, I have been through the secret files of the Council on Foreign Relations at the Harold Pratt House at 5080 68th Street in New York City, and back in 1939, 2 years before the war, they were already planning on what was going to happen when we got into the Second World War. And many of those same people working in the higher echelons of the Council on Foreign Relations were busy actually financing Adolf Hitler and giving him the wherewithal to create the war machine that was going to be used to create the Second World War. And, of course, it's the same story over and over again, the betrayal in Korea, the fact that we were never allowed to attack the enemy. You can't fight a defensive war, but we were required to fight a defensive war. And some night we're going to tell you the true story of what really happened in Korea. And of course, Vietnam, you remember the Gulf of Tonkin incident, only there really wasn't any Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was all created. And for 10 years, we fought a war that we never intended to win. The true story and the true reasons behind Vietnam have never really been told, and fortunately we have that information because we got it from the man who was the chairman of the National Security Council at the time we originally became committed to the war, and he told the insiders, those people within the hierarchy of those people who really make the decisions behind the scenes, the real reasons for Vietnam, and said, don't say we ought to get out of Vietnam. I don't say we have a choice between continued support for socialistic programs in America and persistence in Vietnam, because exactly the opposite is the case. Anyone who believes in the great new departures in health and education and welfare, anyone who believes in the cause of equal justice, shouldn't say we ought to get out of Vietnam, because if we get out of Vietnam, there'll be a strong counter-reaction to our domestic programs. And so for 10 years, we fought a war to lose. I mean, after all, Vietnam is a country the size of the state of Mississippi, and you mean to tell me that the United States couldn't put down the state of Mississippi if it was an insurrection? I mean, you know, there are a lot of things I'd believe, but not that. And any logical person knows we never intended to win the war. We simply did to our fighting men in Vietnam what Roosevelt did to our fighting men in Pearl Harbor. We left them to be betrayed. And, of course, the same forces were at work in 1965 to 1973. Same forces were in control then that were in control at the time of the Second World War. And you remember I just quoted you from Charles Beard talking about the Rockefeller Foundation and the Council on Foreign Relations. Well, the Council on Foreign Relations is still there. In fact, it's fascinating as we look and see what's happening. We have a new president. And you'll be pleased to know that he's appointing real independent people. For instance, he had just appointed Warren Christopher to be our Secretary of State. Now, who is Warren Christopher? Longtime member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He appointed Lloyd Bentsen to be our Secretary of Treasury. Very important position. Lloyd Bentsen, longtime member of the Bilderberger Group, which is an international extension of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Rockefeller interests. You see, the more things change, the more they remain the same. And the tragedy is that most people out there really don't understand what's going on. Well, our telephone number is 464-8295. If you'd like to call in, we have about 10 minutes before the break for the news. And during that time, if you'd like to call in, make a comment on this or another subject, we'd be most happy to hear from you. Want to tell you that tomorrow evening we're having a very, very special surprise guest. Somebody who is going to be talking about local politics rather than international politics. I will give you a hint. It's a woman, and her slogan is think globally but act locally. And she's led many of the local political campaigns here over the last few years. Let's see. I'm getting oh, yes. The woman has a slogan that's Take Back Our Town. I won't go any further than that, but that's our special surprise guest for Wednesday, and next week we have some excellent guests coming. We're going to have a return of our libertarian friend, John Wilkes. He's going to be on Tuesday and talking about libertarianism from more or less a Christian point of view. And, of course, within the libertarian movement, there are Christians and there are non-Christians. The problem with the libertarian philosophy, from my point of view, is that if you come at it from an immoral or amoral point of view, you got real problems. I happen to be a libertarian, but I work within one of the major political parties because I believe that's the only way we're going to be effective at the present time. But the libertarian ideal that we have that goes back to the time of Thomas Jefferson was basically what America was created. It was the foundation upon which our nation was created, and that is that you were to limit the power of government, and basically, as Thomas Jefferson said, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution, for that government governs best that governs the least. And on line one, we have Adrian from Santa Cruz. Adrian, are you here?
Hello, Adrian.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Well, I'm glad that you called. Did you ever hear our interview with John Tolan?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I almost called in earlier just to thank him personally for the work that he's done, I was kind of wishing that I could ask him for some advice for how to sift through all the information that's presented to us in magazines and just everywhere, because what you've spoken about just even in the last 10 minutes is information that you seem comfortable with, that it seems that from your perspective, from your experience reading and things like that, you've been able to sift information through and decide what's true and what's not. And that's something which I struggle to do. I mean, in the case of the Kennedy assassination and stuff, it's like it's almost hard to even believe some of the stuff which is fact. And I guess if I had a question to you, was with how would you suggest someone begin to explore the information?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of planned confusion out there, and there's no easy way to do this. What you need to understand is that if it comes out in the general media, you better question it. And what are they trying to tell me? What are they trying to cover up? Because most of our media is controlled. Who owns the Santa Cruz Sentinel? Do you know who owns the Santa Cruz Sentinel? Dow Jones Company. Who's Dow Jones Company? Part of the Council on Foreign Relations. And it goes right on down the line, and you'll find that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Denver Post, the Central Post Dispatch, Time, Life, Newsweek, U.S. News, I mean, these are all tied into the Council on Foreign Relations, even the Reader's Digest is. So they publish conservative publications, they publish liberal publications. I will tell you, when I was back at their headquarters in New York City, and they had all their publications. They had their internationalist publications, the Roundtable, the Royal Institute publication, International Affairs, Foreign Affairs. And then they had the National Review, Bill Buckley's magazine, right next to the New Republic. So they publish magazines for the left and for the right. What you need to understand, basically, is that there is an invisible government. There has been for probably the better part of this century. And if you want to get a reading list of how to understand how it all fits together, you give us a call off the air, and we'll be glad to start getting you reading in the right direction. You have to read the plan. The plan for the dictatorship in America was written in 1911 in a book called Philip to Administrator, written by Colonel Edward Mandel House, a book very hard to get today. But you can get these books through people who deal with censored material. I can give you a list of probably 10 publications to read. There are a few that I really value and value very much. One of them is Don McIlvenny's McIlvenny Intelligence Report, Ron Paul's publication. He was a congressman for, I think, something like 5 or 6 terms. The most outstanding conservative in the Congress of the United States, and never got written up any place. He eventually ran for president on the Libertarian Party ticket. I suppose maybe I could give you a quotation from the Bible. Fear of God is the beginning of all wisdom, because this is a spiritual struggle. Let me see now. My producer asked me to ask you how you heard about our station.
Well, I wash dishes this time of the evening, and I just scan around until I find something interesting, and then I lock onto it.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you're going to lock onto this regularly, because we're going to be on with you from 8 to 10 regularly in the evening, trying to get you educated. And we want you to call your friends and tell them to listen. This is the only way we're going to get our information out. We're, believe me, a low-budget program. If you want books, we do have books available. In fact, probably one of the best books available on what's going on today is a book written by Pat Robertson. And I don't know whether you like Pat or not. That isn't important. But his book, The New World Order, it gives you a great overview of what's going on today. And if you'd like to get a copy of that, you could call us after the a program here, and we'd be glad to get you one. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz. That's 95063, and address the letter to Radio Liberty. And you're welcome to call any time. But let me tell you, there are a lot of people out there confused. They really don't understand what's going on. I mean, we were given a choice between Bush, Clinton, and Perot. They all happen to come from the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, you never heard that. In fact, the interesting thing about Perot is, although he got in the council several years ago, his name does not occur or does not appear on the list of members. And the reason for that is they always do that if somebody's going to run for political office. And they've done that repeatedly. They drop people's name so their name doesn't appear if they are going to run for, usually for the presidency, something of that sort. So obviously Perot's candidacy was planned sometime beforehand. And we were given the choice of one of their three candidates, but whichever one won, why, it was their candidate. And this has happened so often. For instance, there were three other candidates: Andrew Moreau, the Libertarian; Howard Phillips, U.S. taxpayers; and Colonel Bo Greitz, one of the most decorated heroes from Vietnam. And we're going to have Colonel Greitz on here in the not too distant future, and you'll have an opportunity to talk to him, and he will tell you how he was actually sent by President Reagan into Burma, into the Golden Triangle, looking for American prisoners of war. What he found there was not prisoners of war, but the fact that high officials in the American government were involved in the drug trade, and specifically Richard Armitage. And you'll see his name mentioned very, very frequently in the Bush administration. And when Colonel Greitz came back and tried to tell the story, he was indicted in Carson City. They tried to get him convicted on a federal charge. And when the judge called the assistant U.S. Attorney General in and said, "Why are you charging Colonel Greitz?" The man said, "Because I got a call from and told, get Bo Greitz. Doesn't matter what it is, get him." And the judge said, "And who gave you the order?" And he said, "George Bush." Now, Bo Greitz has gone all over the country telling that story, but I bet you haven't ever heard that before.
Listen, I would like to go off the air so I can hear you better, because the connection isn't good.
All right, look, well, thank you so very much for calling, and it's almost time for the break. And let me give our telephone numbers again, 464-8295. But thank you so much for calling, and call any time, and we'll have any questions. Don't be afraid to ask, and especially ask our guests, because you'll never have a chance to talk to John Toland again.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but I look forward to the new guest.
All right, fine. Thank you so very much. We're going to have an exciting time next week, and hope you'll be with us, and tell your friends to listen as well.
I will.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.